Good evening. It's 6 o'clock on Thursday, October 13th, and this is the Kill Radio News. Iraq body count for today. Minimum civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, 26,521. Maximum, 29,873.
Rejoice, friends. Big government is over. From now on, instead of community, you will be left in the marketplace to fend for yourselves, claw for yourselves, stab for yourselves, guard for yourselves what little money, savings, dignity, and shelter you have left. After your jobs are downsized, exported to Mexico, tennis shoes made by slaves in camps in Indonesia, computer jobs sent across the ocean to Indonesia. You will be next unless you bow down, lick our boots, and throw your benefits away, your raises away. And this is all you have to look forward to forever. Are slashed. No more tax and spend welfare state. The windfall from tax cuts for the rich is more and more people out in the cold on the street begging for money. And when that doesn't work, robbing people, carjacking, home invasion. Everyone taught that life is so cheap, there's nothing to look forward to except what you can score and smoke in a pipe. Ending welfare as we know it means third world crime as we know it. So why is it all these young people today misbehave? Don't they appreciate the world we've built for them? Crappy jobs, dog eat dog, no compassion in the marketplace. If you like school, you'll love work. Instead, they ditch school and hang out on the street. Job culture, young hooligans, everywhere you look, on TV anyway, and in the newspaper, they're causing trouble. More and more people will pour in the streets as their rents go up and job opportunities go down. So we have to keep them down before they rise up and burn our house of cards to the ground. It's just the cost of doing business in third world countries where we keep the peasants down. We have to live in armed compounds with armed guards, play tennis at gunpoint. A different route to work behind bulletproof glass each day. But hey, the more the hordes hate you, the more status you've got. Why not do this with the whole world? With GATT treaties, downsizing. But what about those goddamn hooligans in the street? We stole their future. It's all their fault. We must lock them up. But there's no room in the jails. So the best way to sweep them away, make every home a prison today. Curfew. Curfew. Who cares how much our leaders are corrupt as long as they're tough on crime? Curfew. Keep them away. Curfew. No longer unauthorized activity. You can't leave the home without an electronic ankle bracelet. Your offenders must be tagged and watched at all times.
substance without permission. Tag them. Curfew them. Keep them down. Keep them at home. To school. To rent a video on the way home and stay home. Just like at work. Do not gather after dark. Curfew. It's such a family-oriented word. A much more acceptable, smiling, soft word. A much more palatable concept than martial law. Put your bracelets on. You're safer when you're watched. Don't go outside. You'll set the alarm off. Curfew. Forever.
That's such a great song. That was Cold Cut with Jello Biafra. The name of the song is Every Home a Prison. It's from their album Let Us Play. Good times. This is John Hirschfield. I'm reading the news for you today. Like a bedtime story. You know, speaking of things that are bad. Today in the news, according to the AP, Iraqis increase security for historic vote. Hundreds of Iraqi police and army troops fanned out across Baghdad on Thursday, that's today, October 13th, setting up checkpoints and fortifying polling stations with barbed wire and blast barriers 2 days ahead of a historical constitutional referendum. From the city's Shiite stronghold of Qazamiyah to its southern approaches in the notorious Triangle of Death, the capital's usually chaotic traffic was down to a tiny fraction. And not because it's Yom Kippur. Many stores didn't bother to open, and others shuttered early ahead of a 10 p.m. curfew. 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 By nightfall, Baghdad streets were almost emptied of civilians. The large army and police presence, combined with the scarcity of people and vehicles, gave the city a disquieting calm. Until... Similar security precautions were in place across much of Iraq in anticipation of a spike in attacks by insurgents who want to derail the political process. Nearly 450 people have been killed in violence over the past 18 days, with thousands more killed by acts of civil disobedience. Even with no people on the streets, sharp divisions over the referendum were visible in Baghdad. Hundreds of posters and banners urging a yes vote were plastered on virtually every wall and shop window of the Shiite district of Qazamiyah. Iraq's top Shiite cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, has ordered his followers to approve the constitution, saying something like, "Approve the constitution or die!" In contrast, not a single referendum poster was visible in the Sunni district of Qazamiyah, just across the Tigris River. A banner by the Sunni Arab Iraqi Islamic Party urging a no vote was removed from where it hung a day earlier, outside Azamaya's Grand Imam Mosque. The party changed its stance after Sunni, Shiite, and would you believe, Kurdish lawmakers agreed Wednesday to several amendments to the document designed to win Sunni Arab support in Saturday's vote. Still, no new yes banner was on display in the district. Many other Sunni Arab parties still oppose the charter. In the so-called Triangle of Death, a mainly Sunni area known for kidnappings and killings, and pie, there was no sign of posters either. Iraqi troops searched cars under the watchful eyes of comrades manning machine gun positions. U.S. helicopters hovered over the area. Traffic on the road through the triangle was thin. "I will vote yes so as to isolate the troublemakers," said Faisal Galab, a Sunni Arab sheikh from the town of Qazamiyah, about 12 miles south of Baghdad. "I have asked my family and clan to vote yes," adding something like, "Vote yes or die." U.S. military spokesman Major General Rick Lynch provided an upbeat assessment of the security situation ahead of the vote, arguing that the insurgent danger was far less than on the eve of the January 30th parliamentary election, which was, quote, really, really fucked up. Also, Iraq's security forces total 200,000 now, compared to 138,000 in January, Lynch said. But he still expects a referendum spike in attacks. The insurgents have declared war on democracy, and they're going to conduct horrific acts of violence, he said. In a clampdown to safeguard the vote, Iraq's borders closed Thursday at midnight and will reopen Sunday. Baghdad's international airport will be shut Friday and Saturday, so you can cancel those big plans you had to go to Baghdad for the weekend. Private vehicles are banned for 2 days starting Friday evening. A nationwide 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew began Thursday and remains in force until Sunday. If the charter is adopted, a general election will be held in 2 months to elect a full-term parliament. If it fails, an election will still be held in December, but only for another interim chamber that will try again to draft a charter. If you understand that, you're way smarter than me. The Constitution will fail if it falls short of a simple majority or is rejected by two-thirds of voters in three of Iraq's 18 provinces. Underlining fears of a surge in violence, President Bush on Thursday, that's our president, sought to rally U.S. troops in Iraq, saying, quote, "The enemy understands that a free Iraq would be a blow." To their vision. We put in motion something that can't be stopped. And that is the march of freedom. He told this to soldiers based in Saddam's hometown of Tikrit in a video conference. Probably from the back of a limo. There are now 156,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, a total that has been rising in recent weeks as the 101st Airborne returns, along with lead elements of the 3rd Corps Support Command. Before the scheduled rotation, the number was about 140,000, the military said. Security at the estimated 6,000 polling stations will be responsibility of, get this, Iraqi police. They will be aided by Iraqi soldiers forming a ring around polling centers, while U.S. and other coalition troops would form a wider ring, according to Lynch. The last-minute amendments to the draft constitution adopted Wednesday were designed to win Sunni Arab support, but did not meet all their demands, primarily for a clear assertion of Iraq's Arab identity and a reduction of wide powers accorded to provincial governments that Sunnis say could lead to Iraq's breakup. In Fallujah, a city west of Baghdad that was once a bastion of the insurgency, local Sunni leaders met with supporters late Thursday at a mosque to get out the no vote. One speaker, Sheikh Kamal Nazal, urged Fallujah mosque imams to use their Friday sermons to call for rejection. Quote, "It's a constitution built on sectarian bases that will fragment Iraq and divide the Sunnis. It will not protect the rights of the Sunnis." Adding, "Vote no or die." And, "I've been voting no since before voting was invented." And that's the case for Iraq. Actually, before I read another article, I want to play something that I saw online, and hopefully it'll work if I play it. This is an interview with a member of British Parliament. Just a little bit more info about why this war really sucks. Let's see if this works. This is from truthout.org, which is run by children, but still very, very important.
This is Sarah Gelza reporting from truthout.org, and we are here with Mr. George Galloway, Respect Member of Parliament, who is touring America, and he's just arrived to speak to the citizens of Los Angeles. So, Mr. Galloway, you have been against the war since it was first proposed.
Yes. If the British government had listened to me and the anti-war movement in Britain, they wouldn't be in the terrible trouble they're in now. In the south of Iraq, in Basra, 8,000 British soldiers are just one fatwa away from an absolute disaster, a disaster that British arms has not faced since the Second World War. The news today is that the local authorities in the south of Iraq have broken off all relations with the British occupation force. The puppet regime's police force, who were installed in the first place by Britain, are now in a state of open revolt against the British presence. and the British government's under intense pressure to withdraw the British forces. It would have been better if they had never been sent in the first place.
So in Basra, you think that British forces, as a result, will be removed?
Well, there was a poll in the Sky News, that's the Fox equivalent, owned by Rupert Murdoch, yesterday, which showed 86% of the British people demanding the immediate withdrawal of British forces. Right-wing newspapers are running banner headlines like, "Bring them home." The British people were never in love with this war. Even before they knew what they know now, they thought instinctively it was a bad idea. Now that they know what they know now, they've turned from never being in love with it to bitterly hating the government for what it's done. And the anti-war movement in Britain now has the wind in its sails, and we will not stop until we have forced the withdrawal of British forces from the occupation of Iraq.
And when you say what they know now, are you referring to the Downing Street memos?
Well, the Downing Street memos and a hundred other things. We were told that the reason for the need for an urgent, imminent attack upon Iraq was that it was brimful of weapons of mass destruction. That turned out to be one of the greatest lies in all modern history. We were told that Iraq was connected to 9/11. Now it's acknowledged that it was not. We were told that there was Al-Qaeda in Iraq. There wasn't, but there certainly is now. As a matter of fact, we've made 10,000 new bin Ladens as a result of the action we took in Iraq. We were told, above all, that the British Army and the American Army would be received as liberators by the people of Iraq, showered with flowers and rice. In fact, there are 2,000 dead American boys and girls lying under the ground now as a testimony to the size of that lie. 15,000 American soldiers wounded, many of them maimed forever, going around in wheelchairs for the rest of their lives as a result of these lies. So we have a leader on our side of the Atlantic and on yours who are exposed as brazen liars and conspirators. And frankly, President Nixon was impeached for much less than that. His crime against the people of the United States was much less than the crimes of President George W. Bush. And when you compute the pitiful, shameful performance of the United States government over the Katrina hurricane and its aftermath, you begin, I think, to see a very powerful case for saying you simply can't afford to allow this president to stay in office for the next 3 years. You must find a way of shifting him from the Oval Office in your own interest and the interests of the people of the world. My message is that our two countries are the biggest problems in the world today. Our two leaders have made us the biggest rogue states in the world today. So if they can stand shoulder to shoulder, we have to stand shoulder to shoulder. Those of us who oppose our government's actions in both countries have to work much more closely together. And together we may be able to garner the force, the power, to force a change in our government's policies and preferably soon followed by a change in our governments.
So you've been touring America. What have you noticed about the anti-war movement since you've been here in America?
Well, I think the political landscape is beginning to shift in the United States. The Cindy Sheehan phenomena of a mother, a very brave mother of a young soldier who gave his life for these lies, has, I think, sparked a nationwide soul-searching. And then, as I say, followed on the heels by Katrina, the hurricane, which showed that not only is the Bush administration malevolent, but it's also utterly incompetent. And a malevolent and competent government is not fit to run its own country, never mind run the other countries of the world, which is what the Bush administration definitely had in mind before they ran into the brick wall, that is the resistance to their occupation of Iraq. So I think there are now real possibilities for the anti-war movement in the United States, as in Britain, of forcing such a change. The principal problem in both countries is the lack of an opposition party central enough and big enough to speak for the new majority in both countries. We have formed a party in Britain, Respect, of which I'm one of the leaders, because the Labour Party, the Conservative Party, the Liberal Democrats were simply not up to the job. In the United States, I'm afraid the Democratic Party appears to have been struck dumb by the failure of the Bush policy in Iraq, and as well they might be, because most of them supported it and are hopelessly compromised by that support for the war and the occupation. Some of them, even Hillary Clinton, wants to send even more American soldiers to Iraq, even more than George Bush has sent. So your fundamental problem, it seems to me, if I may be so bold as to intrude in your affairs, is that you have no political class ready, able, willing to speak for that new majority that exists in the country. And that's why thousands of people are coming to hear a British politician speaking. And thousands of them are buying my book. And every meeting I attend is attended by the best part of 1,000 or more. And it's clear from the attitude of the audiences that they so wish that there were American elected officials who would be crisscrossing the country, galvanizing support, building up the anti-war movement, and trying to get rid of George W. Bush.
Thank you. And is there any other message, anything else you'd like to say to Americans?
No, I'd like to congratulate Truth Out.
Well, that's that then. Malevolent, incompetent British parliamentary member George Galloway on George W. Bush. One George to another. What else do we have in the news? This is from USA Today. Bush says, focus on Meyer's faith. Okay. President Bush said Wednesday that efforts by his staff to underscore the evangelical religious beliefs of Supreme Court nominee Harriet Meyers are appropriate because those beliefs are a crucial part of her background. Meyer's faith has become a key part of a White House outreach campaign to conservatives wary of her nomination. People are interested to know why I picked Harriet Meyers, Bush told reporters at the White House. Yes, none less than he. They want to know Harriet Meyers' background. They want to know as much as they possibly can before they form opinions. And part of Harriet Meyers' life is her religion. Which is the Jesus one. Conservatives such as William Kristol, editor of the Weekly Standard, have questioned whether Meyers is a committed conservative and the best qualified nominee, given that she has never been a judge and has little public record. Part of the effort to reassure Bush's political base has been to underline Meyers' religious views, but some Democrats, such as Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy, say Bush is using Meyers' faith to show that she's passed a conservative litmus test. Bush's comments followed a radio broadcast Wednesday by conservative Christian wizard James Dobson, in which Dobson said he'd been assured by White House aide Karl Rove that Meyers is quote, an evangelical Christian from a very conservative church which is almost universally pro-life, end quote. Rove later got drunk and outed 15 CIA agents. The White House did not dispute Dobson's characterization of the conversation. Dobson ignited controversy last week by saying the White House had given him confidential information, as the White House is known to do to random conservative Christian leaders. This was information about her conservative views, but he said Wednesday Rove didn't tell me anything about how Meyers would vote, including possibly reversing Roe v. Wade, the 1973 ruling that didn't unlegalize abortion nationwide. Dobson's disclaimer didn't satisfy Leahy, the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, which will hold Meyers' confirmation hearings. Leahy said Wednesday that White House whispers and signals to supporters could be a signal from Bush that Meyers would help overturn Roe. The Judiciary Committee sent Meyers a questionnaire Wednesday asking whether she made any representations to individuals or interest groups about how she might rule as a justice, or whether others at the White House did, She responded by saying, "What's a justice? I've never been a judge. How did I end up here?" Dobson said Rove also told him Bush's short list of possible nominees dwindled before Myers was named because some withdrew. Rove then got drunk and outed 15 more CIA agents. White House spokesman Scott McClellan said the number under consideration was still in double digits when a couple withdrew. When asked how much was a couple, he said, I believe I've answered that question. Next, Scott McClellan. I went to high school with a guy like Scott McClellan. This is interesting. Team searching for poultry in a country called Turkey. This is an article about... Well, I'll read it. A team in white, full-body protective suits scoured a village in western Turkey Thursday for any poultry farmers that might be hiding or that could have escaped destruction after the European Union confirmed a virulent strain of bird flu had been detected in the region. The Turkish government said it has contained the outbreak of the H5N1 virus, which scientists worry might mutate into a human virus and spark a pandemic. Bird flu was detected after 1,800 turkeys died on a farm in Kiziksa, 80 miles southwest of Istanbul. Authorities have destroyed some 8,600 turkeys and chickens in the area and placed the village under quarantine, but hundreds of poultry apparently escaped destruction. Normally it would be over, but a few people are hiding their chickens, said one veterinary official speaking on condition of anonymity, because Turkish officials can only talk to reporters with prior authorization, or they die. Turkey. Think they're ever going to admit what they did to the Armenians? No. Moving on. First day of school for aspiring Vatican exorcists. Yes, I said exorcists. It was the first day of school, so some students were understandably nervous, but then again, they were not taking just any course, but one run by a Vatican university to teach aspiring demonologists and exorcists. This is that that Pope organization, you know, the one where they molest children. There is no doubt that the devil is intervening more in the life of man these days, said Father Paolo Scarafoni. Most of them priests who want to learn how to tackle the demon if they should ever encounter him. Not all of you will become exorcists, but it is indispensable that every priest knows how to discern between demonic possession and psychological problems. Discern between demonic possession and psychological problems. One curable by a lot of words and holy water, another curable by a lot of words and Prozac. The 4-month course called Exorcism and the Prayer of Liberation is being offered for the second year by Pontifical Regina Apostolorum University on Rome's outskirts. The about 120 students from around the world will hear lectures on topics such as the pastoral, spiritual, theological, liturgical, medical, legal, and criminological aspects of Satanism and demonic possession, and other things that are silly. One planned lecture is called Problems Related to Exorcism and Correlated Issues. One priest who asked not to be identified, Satan, said he decided to take the course after a very unsettling experience while hearing the confession of one young member of his parish. I am so anxious to know what the unsettling experience of this young member of his parish was, because my mind is going one way, and I'm sure the article's going another. Here's what he said. Her voice changed, her face was transformed, and she started speaking in a language that she did not know. I've met people who are suffering from this problem, and it is not as rare as we might imagine. This guy's rare. So, will he be ready to wrestle with demons of the kind who may have possessed his parishioner in the confessional box? Quote, if after this course my superiors decide that it will be useful for me to become an exorcist, I will do it. Interest in the devil and the occult has been boosted by films such as this year's The Exorcism of Emily Rose and last year's Exorcist the Beginning, which was the sequel to the original. Was it? Yeah, that's not even true. It was a sequel to the original. It was the prequel to the original The Exorcist in 1973. But forget the films. The students will have several real-life and well-known exorcists to teach them. One is Father Gabriel Nanni, who attended Thursday's opening class and spoke to Reuters during a break. First thing is, the priest has to know if the devil is at work in a person or if the problem is somewhere else, he said. Nanni said there are four sure signs that pointed to demonic possession rather than psychological problems. One of them was living in Los Angeles. When someone speaks or understands languages that normally do not, when their physical strength is disproportionate to their body size or age, when they are suddenly knowledgeable about occult practices, when they have a physical aversion to sacred things such as the communion host or prayers, and of course when they vote for Bush. According to some estimates, as many as 5,000 people are thought to be members of satanic cults in Italy. In Italy. Italy alone. 5,000 people. With 17 to 25-year-olds making up three-quarters of them. In 1999, the Vatican updated its ritual for exorcism. It starts with prayers, a blessing, and sprinkling of holy water. Then we whip out the iPods. No, wait. The laying on of hands on the possessed, and the making of the sign of the cross. The formula begins, quote, I order you, Satan, and then it goes on to denounce Satan as prince of this world and enemy of human salvation. It ends, go back, Satan. It's the end. Thank God it's your second term. Yes, what else do we have? Drugs. Let's talk about drugs. This is also from, this is from USA Today. Drug agents can't keep up with pot growers. You may not find this funny. I find it hilarious. In the waning days of a record season, a helicopter buzzes treetops here in a remote corner of the Emerald Triangle, not to be confused with Iraq's Triangle of Death. Redwood country notorious as the USA's premier producer of marijuana. State narcotics officers from CAMP, Campaign Against Marijuana Planting, are searching for gardens to eradicate and find six on a warm, cloudless day. They strap into a 150-foot cable dangling from the chopper, drop into the pot patches, hack down the plants, and bundle them for the chopper to haul back to a landing zone. Perhaps $500,000 worth of America's favorite illegal drug. That's not true. America's favorite illegal drug is methamphetamines. Is trucked off for burial. It's not a big day by camp standards. 813 plants that fill a pickup bed. In this ever-growing illicit market, agents routinely find plots of 5,000 and 10,000 plants that require dump trucks to dispose of. In the 2005 growing season, camp says it so far has destroyed more plants than ever. 1.1 million, worth $4.5 billion on the street, up from 621,000 plants last year. But agents still lost ground to growers. No longer is marijuana cultivation the cottage industry that flourished in the 1960s and 70s after waves of counterculture migrants bought cheap land in the Northern California mountains and grew pot for their own use and extra income. Mexican criminals using sophisticated methods have spread the marijuana industry across California, traditionally the nation's main domestic source because of a mild climate and vast stretches of isolated landscape ideal for clandestine growing, and a population made up entirely of actors who smoke pot. As recently as 10 years ago, the Emerald Triangle, counties of Humboldt, Mendocino, and Trinity grew virtually all of the state's pot. Now every California county that's not desert has a problem. Well, problem. Because of tighter security on the southern U.S. border, Mexicans simply made a business decision to move north. Yep. Those Mexicans, they show is smart. Quote, in the last two or three years, almost 100,000 of the gardens we've eradicated are Mexican drug cartel gardens, says James Parker, the senior narcotics agent who oversees camp. It's alarming, if you think about it. He then sat there and thought about it. Today's high-potency weed is so valuable, $5,000 or more for a pound of buds on the East Coast, that big operators employ armed guards who camp in pot gardens for months, nurturing plants that grow to 15 feet and taller. A state fish and game officer was wounded and a suspect shot and killed in a Santa Clara County bust in June, the fourth incident in 2 years. There would be more violence if growers weren't able to flee at the sound of a helicopter looking for gardens, says Jack Nelson, Camp's regional operations commander here. This time of year, they won't go far. The plants are worth too much, he says. If we don't come back soon, they'll be in there harvesting until we do. Fishermen and hikers stumbled onto armed men in the woods who threaten them and demand that they leave. Pot growing has become epidemic, both on privately owned timber tracts and public lands in California, including national forests and parks and other great places to be stoned. A lot of terrain is so rugged and dense with foliage you wouldn't think about taking your family into those areas, Parker says. It's amazing how much work these Mexicans put in to get a crop out. Growers scar the landscape by crudely terracing hillsides that erode under winter rain. They spill pesticides, fertilizer, and diesel fuel used to power generators that run extensive drip irrigation systems. They dam creeks for water sources, plant salsa gardens. What's a salsa garden? Disfigure trees, and leave behind tons of garbage, human waste, and litter. They'll pour fertilizer right into a stream, then irrigate out of it, says Alexandra Picave, a Sequoia National Park ranger. That creates algae blooms, hurts fish and animals, contaminates downstream. Since 2001, officers have destroyed 105 pot gardens covering 181 acres in the park, but have had enough money to clean up fewer than half the sites. We think that for every one we've been able to eradicate, there's another one out there. Camp's critics equate the program with Prohibition in the 1930s. Quote, look at the amount of economic value they're destroying, says Dale Geringer, director of California Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. This could be legally taxed and regulated, and we could all be making money off it. We never saw this lawlessness until there were drug laws and camp. Normal estimates that California's pot consumption could yield at least $250 million a year in sales taxes. Geringer also says that despite the government's assertion, there is no evidence that Mexican cartels are involved in the cultivation. Roger Rudoni is a cattle rancher and registered Republican who has represented a conservative district in Humboldt County. Must be a small district. Conservative by local standards, anyway. On the board of supervisors since 1997, he calls camp an exercise in futility. It's a vast expenditure of public funds that for all practical purposes does no good. Rodoni, 65, says. Demand for marijuana keeps growing and camp has done little to stem the supply, he says. As evidence, he points to a drop in the price of the quality stuff from $6,000 a pound a few years ago to $3,000 today. A June report for Taxpayers for Common Sense by Harvard economist Jeffrey Marin found that despite billions of dollars spent on marijuana suppression, nearly $4 billion by the federal government in 2004 alone, usage is about the same as 30 years ago. CAMP, an arm of the state attorney general's office, was formed in 1983 to help understaffed local authorities ferret out large-scale marijuana crops grown for profit, particularly in isolated areas far from roads where helicopters were needed. You know what? This is a long article. So, you know, long story short, much pot, much exercise and futility to stop much plot. I'm going to read the last couple of sentences here. Mendocino County started going after pot growers in the early 1980s after a spate of violence. Six deputy sheriffs, a sergeant, a legal secretary, and an evidence technician operated on a $500,000 budget. Today, it's just this guy, a deputy, and a $300,000 budget. But with CAMP's help, the cops are more effective, he says, more than doubling the number of plants destroyed in the county compared with early years. And each of those plants carries a lot more kick today. No more of the baggies with stems and seeds that baby boomers remember from their college days. You remember when we were growers learn to sex the plants, as it's called. Cull the males early in the season to deny the females pollination and prevent buds from going to seed. I had the same problem in college, too, when I think about it. In a futile effort to attract pollen, the female plants produce more and more THC, because nothing attracts males like THC. The active ingredient and the source of marijuana's high. The plant's buds get fatter and fatter. By September, they're sticky with THC and ready to harvest. Back in the 60s and 70s, this stuff imported from Mexico, there wasn't much bud to it, No says. If it was good quality, maybe the THC was 5%. Tests nowadays find THC content as high as 21%. So, prohibition is awesome. Keep weed illegal so that the potency stays high. And now it's time for news that doesn't matter, where I will read you news like a bedtime story that really doesn't matter. This headline just really struck a chord with me on a deeply profound emotional level. I don't know if I'm going to read the whole article, but man, this is deep stuff. This is from Reuters today. Exercise can trim deep abdominal fat. Couch potatoes may quickly accumulate a type of deep abdominal fat that contributes to diabetes and other metabolic problems, but regular exercise can prevent or even reverse the process, according to researchers. Their study of overweight sedentary adults found that those who started working out on treadmills and stationary bikes tended to lose, or at least not add to, their stores of visceral fat, fat that accumulates around the abdominal organs. In contrast, their peers, who remained sedentary, showed a substantial gain in visceral fat over just 6 months, according to findings published in the October issue of the Journal of Applied Physiology. While this deep abdominal fat may not make itself apparent in the form of a spare tire, it is linked to a number of ill health effects, including a higher risk of type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, and heart disease. Yes, they actually did a study, and what they discovered was that exercise does not increase fat. Next, Arkansas mother gives birth to 16th child. Michelle Dugar just delivered her 16th child, and she's already thinking about doing it again. Johanna Faith Dugar was born at 6:30 a.m. Tuesday and weighed 7 pounds, 6.5 ounces. The baby's father, Jim Bob Dugar, a former state representative, said Wednesday that mother and child were doing well. He said Johanna's birth was especially exciting because it was the first time in 8 years that the family has had a girl. Jim Bob Dugar, 40, said he and Michelle, 39, want more children. We both just love children, and we consider each a blessing from the Lord. I have asked Michelle if she wants more, and she said yes. If the Lord wants to give us some, she will accept them. She didn't say that. She said, more. I want more. 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 The Discovery Health Channel filmed Johanna's birth and plans to air a show about the family of 18 next May. The Learning Channel is doing another show about the family's construction project, a 7,000-square-foot house that should be finished before Christmas. The home, with the family, which the family has been building for 2 years, will have 9 bathrooms, dormitory-style bedrooms for the girls and boys, a commercial kitchen, 4 washing machines, and 4 dryers. Jim Bob Dugar, who sells real estate, previously lost his bid for the U.S. Senate, spent the rest of his time fucking. He said he expects to run for the state Senate next year, but isn't ready to make a formal announcement. Michelle Dugar had her first child at age 21, 4 years after the couple married. And the article goes on to list the names of the children and their ages. 16. It's a lot of birth. They're birthing it up. The Republicans are going to outbreed us. It's like an alien invasion. And now it's time for my favorite article of the day. And I hope everyone's doing well, by the way. I hope your Yom Kippur was bland and kind of sad and disappointing, as Yom Kippurs tend to be. But maybe you learned something about yourself. I remember I used to fast with my parents, and then we'd go to temple, and then from there we'd go to Roy Rogers fast food place. They have them on the East Coast. I don't know if they have them out here. And we'd get bacon cheeseburgers. So God has other things in store for me. Here's your article. 4,000-year-old noodle dish found in China. This is from Associated Press. And you thought your leftovers were old. A 4,000-year-old bowl of noodles has been discovered at an archaeological site in western China, possible proof for the argument that China invented pasta before Italy. China never invented Italy. Oh, I get it. I see. Quote, "These are definitely the earliest noodles ever found," end quote, said Liu Huyan, a researcher from the Institute of Geology in Beijing, who studied the ingredients of the pristinely preserved pasta. The discovery of the delicate yellow noodles in Min County in the province of... Damn it, why do the Chinese have to spell cities starting with the letter Q? What is... Qinghai is reported in this week's edition of Nature magazine. Quote, "Chinese people say Marco Polo brought noodles from China back to Italy, and Italians say they had noodles before that. All this has been based on documentary material, on personal accounts and menus, but we've been unable to find any actual material until now. The fist-sized clump of noodles was found inside an overturned bowl under 10 feet of sediment from a flood that researchers suspect wiped out the..." It's another Q word. "Kijia culture of the late Neolithic era." The bowl had the word Nissen written finely in red ink. When researchers lifted up the bowl, they discovered the 20-inch noodles sitting atop an inverted cone of clay that had sealed the bowl, it said. The noodles were made from a dough of two local varieties of millet, broom corn and foxtail millet, rather than the more common wheat or rice. The dough was pulled into long strands before being boiled. Rice noodles are popular in southern China, while northerners rely mostly on wheat to make their noodles, dumplings, and bread. The excavation site area is located, is now populated mainly by China's Muslim ethnic Hui minority. The region's poorer farmers reportedly still eat millet noodles, said contributing researcher Ye Maoling, though he has yet to try them for himself. Liu and Ye say they plan to try making millet noodles like those found at the archaeological site themselves. That will be a noodly great time. Johnny Radio's not coming in today. He's kind of busy. Usually he comes in to do the conspiracy news. So, I thought I'd call a friend. I know him only as middle-aged angry white guy. And I'd ask him what he thinks about the state of affairs. You guys want to call him with me? I'm sure middle-aged angry white guy has a lot to say. Let's see. Let's give him a call. Calling angry white guy. Okay. Okay. This is my first time using the phone on the show. Let's see. Ooh, hey. All right then.
Hello?
Hi, is this middle-aged and angry white guy?
Oh, you better believe it, man.
Cool.
So, oh, man.
Let me turn my monitor down here so we can have a little chat. So, what's up, man? You're a middle-class, middle-aged white guy. Like, you know, apparently...
Just rub it in.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, the president, you know, you're supposed to be his base, the middle-aged white guy, right? Aren't you his base?
His base?
Yeah. I'm just, you know, I'm just
I'd like to base him in the head with a bat.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm just sampling the public.
I don't think that would do any good because, you know, if I bashed his head in with a baseball bat, no problem for him because there's no brains there.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem. The reason I ask is I wanted to sample the average American culture. I wanted to reach out into America,
right,
put them on the air, and find out what does this country really think of their president. So tell me, angry middle-aged white guy, what do you think of this president?
I think he's a horse's ass.
Why is that?
Well, I think he's a liar.
Uh-huh.
I think he's a criminal. I think he's a coward. I think he's stupid.
Uh-huh.
I think he's unqualified.
Uh-huh.
I think he's fucked up this country in 5 years than my dog could if he were still alive.
Uh-huh. Interesting. And the war, do you... you're an average middle-aged white guy. You support
right.
the war?
Hell no, I don't support the war.
Uh-huh. So you don't think the war is a good idea? You think he'll be able to bring democracy to Iraq?
Are you kidding me? Those people don't want democracy over there, man.
Wow.
They were happier when Saddam Hussein was in power.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. At least they had electricity.
Well, you've seen a lot of presidents come and go. I mean, like, there's been a lot of bad presidents throughout time. What makes Bush so special?
Well, because the bad presidents that we've had throughout time haven't managed to completely destroy the ecosystem of this country. So that, you know, we used to have just hurricanes that would come in and just kind of blow over and blow some trees down.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have hurricanes that actually eliminate an entire section of the country.
Mm.
And this horse's ass is, I don't know, maybe this will go down as his legacy, as the only president to lose an entire state during his administration. That's pretty amazing when you think of it. Not even Nixon managed to do that.
Huh.
And he's kind of the template for lousy presidents.
Interesting.
But this guy, I mean, it's mind-boggling. Could he be doing any worse?
Do you think your opinions represent a growing minority? Or a majority even in this country?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm what they call a baby boomer.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm on the old side of being a baby boomer.
Uh-huh.
So, basically, I grew up the same time this horse's ass did. Now, what happened to him? How did he get like he is? And how did I get like I am?
His father was president.
Was he?
That might have had, at one point, yeah. And, he was given a lot of oil companies and stuff, but you were given an oil company, weren't you?
An oil company?
No? No one ever gave you an oil company?
No, my old man gave me a Peugeot once.
What is that?
It's a French car.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was nice of him.
Yeah.
What do you think is the best thing for to happen now to Bush? I mean, do you think it could be
impeached? I was just watching the news, and, you know, that little fiasco he had when he's interviewing the troops, that was all staged. You know, they were given the questions ahead of time, what to say, what to... Did you happen to watch the news tonight?
No, I've actually just been doing the news, so
yeah.
I only know what happened within the last, you know,
well, anyway,
hours
he,
ago.
Well, anyway, he had this big... this was supposedly a spontaneous interview with the troops in Iraq before the election,
uh-huh.
You know, to see how things were going. And the whole thing was fake. All the questions were handed to the, you know, they handpicked like half a dozen troops for the president to question. And some shill comes in ahead of the president and gives them all the answers to the questions.
Wow.
And then he gives Bush the questions to ask. So basically, you know, it's like a bad episode of, like, The West Wing. You know, with bad acting and bad writing.
Wow, so it was all scripted, huh?
Yeah, it was all scripted.
That's amazing.
But,
Well, I mean, what in your mind, what would do justice to this president? What should his legacy really be? Like, how should he leave office?
In handcuffs.
Huh. Well, that's That's an interesting way to put it.
With a burlap bag over his head.
Ah, oh, okay. Keep going. I like where you're going.
I think he should be paraded around the outside of the White House for like 3 days after he's impeached and indicted. And, you know, just assemble like 400,000 other angry middle-aged white guys like myself, and we can throw dried feces at him.
And that's why I called Angry Middle-Aged White Guy. Thank you so much for your time, Angry Middle-Aged White Guy.
You're very welcome.
I will call you again in future shows to just sort of test, get a sense of what the rest of the country really feels like.
If you need a rageaholic, I'm your man, buddy.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks
All right.
for being cool.
All right,
take
cool.
care.
Bye. Bye.
This has been the Kill Radio News. And this is John, and hope you enjoyed it. And I'll be back next week with more Kill Radio news and, of course, my music show on Thursday mornings, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Have a good week. And one day, everything is just going to be just fine. It'll be just fine.
The orchestra has a duty to educate the audience.
FBI surveillance, death threats, break-ins, depopulation strategies. FBI surveillance, death threats, break-ins, a civilian assassination campaign. Is this man crazy? Is this man crazy? Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
The billions are the first casualty. The victim will always be the largest group of people killed, and non-combatant will always have the largest number of victims.
Is this man crazy? Is this man crazy? Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
It fries your brain. It fries your brain. It fries your brain.
The whole mind will be utterly annihilated.
It fries your brain. It fries your brain. It fries your brain.
I just can't take it anymore.
Cocaine from Latin America. Opiates from Afghanistan. Marijuana from many sources. People are creatures of habit. Cocaine from Latin America, opiates from Afghanistan, and marijuana from many sources. They believe the earth is satanically controlled.
I've killed commies like you before, and if I had you on the end of a bayonet, I'd stab and stab, stab and stab, stab and stab, stab and stab, and stab till there was nothing left.
Is this man crazy? Is this man crazy? Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
I've killed commies like you before, and if I had you on the end of a bayonet, I'd stab and stab, stab and stab, stab and stab, stab and stab, stab and stab till there was nothing left.
Is this man crazy? Is this man crazy? Yes, he is.